The 920 KVEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kvec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 01111911.
Have you ever got that deer in the headlights look from the salesperson at your local auto parts store? This, unfortunately, is common these days, but don't stress. There is an easy solution. Try shopping at Westside Auto Supply. Steve, Kevin, and Jackie have over 130 years of combined experience in the auto parts industry. They will only sell you the top quality parts for your hot rod or daily driver. Their prices are competitive with the box stores, so head to Westside Auto Supply at 56 Prado in Slo. Buy the best from the best. Westside Auto Supply.
Whether you're driving one of these.
One of these.
One of these. Or someday, even one of these. Whatever you're driving, Motor Mouths has answers for all of your automotive questions. And now your host, Jason from Absolute Auto Tech.
Good morning, everyone. How are we doing? Gorgeous Saturday morning. A little windy yesterday for me, but otherwise good, good, good. It's sunny, it's beautiful, at least where I'm at, out here in the desert. I'm not in the studio this morning. So, you know, having some fun, enjoying the beautiful desert. So let's start the show. If you have the time, the place, the space, the parts, inclination, and the information, I want to help you. I want to help you to come.
I need somebody help, not just anybody help. You know, I need someone help.
Are not nearly as pretty or as bountiful as the taxes being placed upon me when I go to the pump. And I'm kind of frustrated with that. So, if anybody else knows where they go, I'd love to know what direction they're going.
Jason, you kind of cut
out.
You kind of cut out.
Call 805-543-8830. Tell me if you know. I want to know. I'm curious. I'm sure a bunch of us would love to know.
Jason. You kind of cut out for a second, so maybe you want to repeat
that. The other day I was told that the electric cars that we all, I'm going to say quote-unquote love paying for, are up to 70% heavier than their gas-powered counterpart because of the motors, because of the battery situation for storage and everything. And I've been hearing this cry of the electric semi-truck or heavy haul truck is the future. And my concern would be if you were to purchase one as a business owner, if the tractor, the semi-truck that we currently have, let's say it weighs 15,000 pounds, a big full-on 10-wheel tractor to pull an 8-wheel trailer. What's the electric tractor going to weigh? Because they can't go a full, I don't believe most of them go a full 8-hour drive. What is it going to weigh? 25,000 pounds? And that 10,000 pounds is 10,000 pounds less load they can carry, because you don't sit down and go, the maximum load you can have in California is 80,000 pounds, except if you're driving electric, then we'll go 100. So you've got a tractor that can't drive all day, so you have a driver that has to have multiple vehicles to drive, otherwise he can't earn an 8-hour to work day, and then you have a less load that they can carry, because anymore, well, before electrics were brought into the mainstream, anymore the manufacturers were cutting every ounce they could so that the truck could haul more product. For instance, I was talking to a truck driver the other day who was delivering fuel, and he said they can haul up to 9,000 gallons of fuel. Well, that's a lot compared to the past. in the past they could haul less. And the reasons why were because, in his mind, the truck and trailer were designed for this purpose and designed to haul more. But in order to do that, they have to weigh less. So we're going to super singles, the semi-truck tires, because the super single, although heavy, it weighs less than a set of duals and is designed to carry the same weight or similar weight. And that's just one aspect of it. I would imagine those trucks have smaller fuel tanks because they don't need to travel so far. They're not long haulers. They're not going cross country. They have no sleeper cabs, so the cab is very sparse inside to cut down costs and weight. The trailer is very sparse and very has very little, and they're using lighter materials in order to facilitate more load so they can haul more. But now if you take and add 10,000 pounds back into the mix of batteries or more, they may weigh more than 10,000 pounds more. Now you are fighting yourself, and I worry that we are asking too much. I've said on the show before, in my opinion, if you really wanted to cut down the environmental impact of our trucks, first thing would be to figure out some way for those of us consumers. The best, you know, one of the best ways is for us consumers to quit expecting our products so quickly. And that sucks, but nevertheless, if we don't expect them so fast, then we could do other methods, you know, rail or shipping, shipping via rail, let's say. The other thing is a lot of these trucks, especially in cold climates, don't shut off. The drivers start these vehicles, and the only time they shut off is during for a breakdown, or if it's being maintained. And the truck is not on the road that whole time, but if they shut it off, they have the real chance of it not starting if it's too cold out. So they leave them running for reliability reasons. Well, that's a vehicle that can sit there and idle for 8 or 12 hours and not produce anything except heat in the cab. Well, that's a huge environmental thing, as far as I'm concerned, if we're really talking about trying to figure out how to cut back, having some kind of electric heater or some other method, a building to store them in, whatever you want to call it, would be a lot more efficient than letting all these trucks just sit and idle all night. I've seen them idle all night while the drivers are off, even in a normal, you know, average weather, where it's not freezing and it's not going really bad. But the drivers leave them running to run the air conditioners or to run the heater or to keep the battery charged. Whatever they're doing that for comfort. And I'm not saying the driver should be uncomfortable. I'm nowhere saying that these drivers aren't worth their weight and don't need to be pampered at some point and enjoy life. I'm saying that there's got to be another method, a better method, than having a 11, 12, 16-liter engine just sitting idle all night or on the off hours. And that seems to deal with that would seem to be a lot more environmentally friendly than creating a semi-truck that can't do a job that the current one does, just to try to feel more environmentally friendly. And that's more what it is. It's more of a feeling of environmentally friendly. We're not actually changing the environment. We're not helping our environment. We're not helping our world at all by putting an electric semi-truck on the road. It is all just hype and BS, as far as I'm concerned, as far as any criteria that I can see, other than, well, look at the tailpipe, emissions are zero. Well, what are the tailpipe emissions of the vehicle or the device that created the electricity to put it in the semi? So let's get off of my semi and electric car theory. The other problem I have is that one of the biggest problems with our roads, not biggest problems, one of the biggest things that damage our roads that we can control, if you would, because we can't control the weather, is the semi trucks that drive down our roads. They're very, very heavy, and they do damage. I mean, we need them to do the things we do in life. I'm not trying to say we need to outlaw semi trucks. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say we need to change that at all. I'm saying that the heavy vehicles are the ones that do the most damage to our roads. Well, if you take that, it doesn't just need to be over 80,000 pounds. Even light-duty vehicles can do damage. And if we take and look at that again, here we are, have our electric cars driving down the road, and they're heavier than their counterparts, so they're doing more road damage than their counterparts. They're doing more tire damage than their counterparts, their gas-powered counterparts. And if you look at all of the negatives, and I there's a lot of negatives. There's not just all, it's not all just fun love. You don't just go from a regular meat diet to a vegan diet or a non-meat diet and just go, it's just been wonderful, it's been perfect, there are no negatives. There's give and take on all of it. I'm not saying that electric cars are the bane of society. I'm saying they're not all just peaches and cream, and I don't see where there's enough offset yet. We're far enough along that in battery technology to say we're actually winning. I was just using my wife's blower. We have a little leaf blower in the house, and it's electric. Hers is an electric leaf blower, and it's a beautiful tool. 36 volts, it's incredible what it can do. But the batteries don't last very long, and it can be frustrating that you're constantly swapping batteries and changing batteries when you need to do a real project. It's one thing to just blow off the front lawn, walk. It'd be a big deal. But you want to blow off the driveway, that becomes something that device is not really good for. And we end up using the gas-powered one, even though it's louder and a pain because you have to start it and whatnot. So there's give and takes on all of them, I'm just trying to say. I'm not saying one is the answer. And the idea that we're just going to outlaw gas-powered trimmers and whatnot is just, as far as I'm concerned, just the dumbest thing I've heard. I don't know. I don't know where our politicians get this idea, but here lately, I swear, our politicians believe and that their job is to make the taxpayers' lives worse. And I'm getting a little frustrated with the idea that I'm here to serve the politician, and I don't care what they believe. I don't believe that I'm here to serve the politician. And their job is to make us as taxpayers' lives better, as far as I'm concerned. I would love to see one that's willing to. I feel like so many of them don't believe that. So, 805-543-8830. If you know the question of the day, where all of our gas taxpayer dollars going? I was thinking about brakes the other day. We were looking at a car, and the brakes were fine. There was nothing wrong with them except they were wearing a little odd. And it was a newer car, and the brakes would last a long time, and they should. And it kind of hit me that we're not maintaining cars anymore. At least not like we used to. And it used to be every X amount of miles, you'd go in and the technician would go through and lubricate and check and adjust your brakes. And the only time I get to see brakes is when they're so far out and bad that they just need to be replaced. And I would sure like to see us go back to more of a maintenance system. A couple of the electric cars that I've been around, they have failed. And I look at it and I think part of the failures, not the brakes, but the drive systems. And I wonder if those drive systems haven't failed because of lack of maintenance. Because I don't need to change oil because of no oil. I don't need to do anything on this car because it's electric. What do I care? And there's still fluids that should be replaced on those electric cars. And just like our regular cars, there's fluids that need to be replaced. And so much of our income as car automobile operators, so much of our income is spent on replacement of components that could have been, lives could have, the component life could have been extended by proper maintenance. And I feel like we are wasting our dollars not doing maintenance. I mean, yeah, it feels good when you don't walk up and, I mean, you walk up and you're not doing a coolant flush or you're not doing an oil change. But the flip side, though, is when the engine fails and you end up replacing a car, it didn't win. That's not a win. And I see so many of these cars that have extended life oil changes that it's kind of scary that their engines aren't lasting as long and aren't working as well, and they need more expensive repairs. And then our cars are, and it's funny, I was talking to somebody the other day, and we're talking about the idea of, and I sound like a conspiracy theorist in my head. In my head, I sound like a conspiracy theorist, but the auto manufacturers are in the business to sell cars. That's their business, is selling cars, selling new cars. That's their business. And they have dealerships out there so that they can support those new cars. And when you look at their profits, they go up. Their profits go up if they sell more new cars. Their profits really don't go up a lot if they have a whole bunch of cars on the road that have a lot of miles on them. Not that it doesn't look good and it's great window dressing, but they already sold that car. That's a car that's gone. They're not earning anything else on that car. And then you have consumers that are concerned with fuel economy or emissions, whichever, depending on the flavor of the day. We start pushing the idea of replacing those cars with the newer models because they're more efficient or they're more whatever, they're electric. And the consumers end up buying these newer models because they're talked into it instead of maintaining their older model, which is actually better for the environment overall and better for the consumer's dollar overall. And I feel like the government is working with big business, which they do, of course, to talk us into replacing our automobiles. And in a lot of cases, the best choice, most environmentally friendly thing you can do is to maintain and keep your current one on the road. We were talking the other day about the knob. The knob that controls the volume on your radio in your car, just the knob, just that one piece. If you think about the miles put on that knob before you actually get to touch it as a consumer, it has to, you think about how it goes from, if it's plastic, it's going to be crude oil almost always and most of the time. So it comes from the ground, and you got to figure all the things that have to go into to pumping that oil from the ground, the trucks, the people that find the oil, that locate the areas, the trucks and people that go out to drill the hole, the people that go out to put the pumps in, the storage tanks, the piping, and then that oil is moved from the hole to the refinery and all the infrastructure that goes there, and then the refinery takes and refines it to make it into the proper materials for plastic, and those get pumped, taken to the plastic manufacturer. And the plastic manufacturer, so it's got to be shipped to the plastic manufacturer. The plastic manufacturer makes it into plastic beads. Those beads go to the person that makes the actual molding to make the knob, and then that knob is made, and that gets shipped and transported to the person that makes the radio, and installed on the radio, and then that gets shipped to the manufacturer, wherever the plant is that build the vehicle, and then that vehicle is now assembled and then shipped to the dealership where you bought the car. Do you think about how many miles that is? If your oil came from Russia, that is a lot of miles on that knob on that truck. It's incredible. So we have a text coming in. Jim, let's talk.
Yes, text line, doesn't any new car come with a suggested maintenance schedule from the manufacturer? What about just following that?
They do. They have maintenance schedules. So, and what I've seen, most of the manufacturer maintenance schedules are to get you to about three times the warranty. If you have a 36,000, so about 100,000 miles, 120,000 miles is where they need to get you. And if you think about it as, it will allow you to drive your car safely for that time frame. And they're absolutely true. Under most conditions, it should cover you, most drivers, for that time frame. But if you want to see more out of your car, if you're doing more with your car, if you have a bike rack or a luggage carrier on top of your car, if you do use it off highway, if you shuttle six kids around town, all you do is drive it once a week back and forth to the grocery store, anything other than the normal, if you would, driving of a car, you're probably covered for 100,000 miles and you'll be fine. It's all those extras and those people that want to see more than 100,000 miles out of their car. That's what I'm talking about, is the payback on your car is when you start to see 150, 200,000 miles of reliable service. That's when that car really starts to pay back environmentally and in your pocketbook. And not that I'm saying don't buy a new car, or people should keep their car for 200,000-300,000 miles. I'm not trying to tell anybody what to do. I'm saying for those of us that want to, for those people, the maintenance that's the minimum maintenance, if you would, that your car minimum maintenance requirement is this, to keep it able to do the things that there is designed to do. But some of us want more out of our cars, and some of us want to go farther than 100,000 miles from our cars. And that's when we really need to consider a different type of maintenance and doing more than what the owner's manual says. Someone told me that the owner's manual said, don't replace your drive belt until the chunks are coming out of it. Well, that's great, and they're probably correct. And that means that you need to start keeping a better look. You need to start looking at your drive belt more often, the serpentine belt, because when chunks are coming out, you have a few miles left, like less than 100. So if you're not checking your drive belt every 100 miles, then I would change it earlier than that, unless you want to be on the side of the road. Waiting for a tow truck. Now, I'm not saying you need to replace it every 20,000 miles. I don't know how often you should change your drive belt on your car, because it depends on how it's used and the design of the belt. But having someone that understands what the end of a life of a drive belt looks like, or doing research on it so that you change it before it fails, as far as I'm concerned, is very important. You don't really have to change a tire until it just blows. There's no reason to. Except that I don't want my tire to blow. I don't want the failure. I want to replace it while it's still safe and it still has some service life in it, because that way I know that I'm going to be at the tire place fixing having tires instead of on the side of the road getting a tire. And I guess it's all about what you want out of your car. If you want it to be reliable and hassle-free or low hassle, then we take care of that. You don't need to put gas in your car until it's out of gas, right? It's still got gas. What am I worried about? Well, but when it runs out of gas, that's when the hassle starts. That's when I have to go walk to a gas station. I have to go find somebody to get me gas. So as far as I'm concerned, it's no different. Why would you want to wait until you need brakes, before you replace them? You want to replace them while they're still while they're still functioning properly. Because when they quit functioning properly, that's when you cause an accident. Same thing with maintenance. You don't want to change the oil after it's damaged the engine. You want to change it before it damages the engine. And having someone on your side that looks out for those kinds of things, or doing the research yourself, that's what really wins, and that's where we win. That's what I'm saying. If you did, I mean, look in your owner's manual. See when the next service interval is for brake service. When do they want you to do, other than brake fluid, which some cars don't require ever doing brake fluid, which is just completely asinine to me. But look at your car and see when it says lubricate and adjust brakes in the owner's manual. Most cars never have it. Well, back in the 60s we did, 70s we did. We did that as part of servicing the car. And that doesn't mean that doesn't need to be done. It means they don't do it anymore. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't be looking at servicing the brakes. It just means that they don't add it because, they'll last for 100K as long as you're nice to them. So why would you want to service them? Well, because I want to see them go 250K on a set of brakes. I want to go 250,000 miles without doing brakes because they're operating properly. Not because I didn't, because I'm just running metal to metal or I'm ruining things, because they are still working properly. That's why I want to go 250,000 miles. That's why I want to try. Because brakes are expensive to do it right. Machining rotors, replacing rotors, good pads, calipers, hoses, all that stuff gets expensive fast. Well, if I can have if I can crawl into my car and disassemble and lubricate and clean the components and then reassemble and they last twice as long, well, why wouldn't I do that? I mean, it's not a very expensive or time-consuming process. Why wouldn't I want to make the brake last twice as long? I want the engine to last twice as long. I want every other component. That's just one thing that hit me the other day. All right, Jim, let's take a break. And 805-543-8830 if you want to chime in and talk about our subject, or if you have a question on another subject. I'm good. We could play. Sounds good.
All right. So we got a classic commercial here. We're going back to the 1950s or 60s, I guess. Probably the 60s because it's Volkswagen. And it's King Kong. Now, King Kong is being popular in the movie theaters again with Godzilla and all that. So King Kong is rescuing the damsel in distress off the top of the Empire State Building and feeling like she would be safe in a VW. So he puts the damsel in distress into a VW.
For a big car as good as a Volkswagen, maybe you should look into our big car, the Volkswagen 411. It has some things no Volkswagen ever had, like four big doors and lots of room and luxury for the whole family. It has some advanced things most cars don't have, like electronic fuel injection, an automatic preheating system, and a big trunk up front. But you don't have to be a genius to drive the 411, because it comes with an automatic transmission, also as standard equipment. So now, there's a Volkswagen big enough for just about everyone. The Volkswagen 411 four-door sedan.
Have you ever got that deer in the headlights look from the salesperson at your local auto parts store? This, unfortunately, is common these days, but don't stress. There is an easy solution. Try shopping at Westside Auto Supply. Steve, Kevin, and Jackie have over 130 years of combined experience in the auto parts industry. They will only sell you the top quality parts for your hot rod or daily driver. Their prices are competitive with the box stores, so head to Westside Auto Supply at 56 Prado in Slo. Buy the best from the best. Westside Auto Supply.
Absolute Auto Tech in San Luis Obispo wants to extend thanks to all of their loyal customers over the years. Drive safe on the roads and take the time to maintain your automobiles. You can count on Absolute Auto Tech for high quality repairs for your safety and safe driving needs. Absolute Auto Tech has been performing auto repair services since 1997 at the corner of Sacramento Drive and Capitolio Way in San Luis Obispo. Come by or call 547-1062. That's 547-1062.
Decided to rock the place with a little Cheap Trick this morning, Jason.
I like it.
Great. A little Surrender here, so we're about to the. I was looking for car songs, and this came up, and I'm like, I don't know how it's a car song, but I like Cheap Trick and I like Surrender, so we're going to play it this morning.
I like it. Good song.
All right, so you're back, and it's sounding good so far, by the way.
So have the other day I was we all have our lives, we all work our lives, we do what we need to do, and that's the same thing with me. Car needs service. I work on it. Guys that work on it. I have a great crew. And I love them. They do a great job. And we were performing upper intake cleaning, what we call upper intake cleaning, which is a combustion cleaning. We clean the throttle plate, and then we run a cleaner down, and it eliminates a lot of the carbon built up in the engine. And it's a byproduct of combustion of our inefficient combustion engines, of any combustion engine. I don't know of any engine that doesn't build up some carbon. And it is a really good service that I think has gone by the wayside that people are not doing enough of anymore. I'm sure you can buy the kits from Westside Auto Supply and do it yourself. It's a really nice service that basically takes and removes the carbon from inside the combustion chamber. And the reason why you want to do that is during normal operation, that carbon can get build up, and then it ends up, in worst case scenarios, it can end up impacting itself between the piston and the cylinder head and create knocks and pinging and really damage the engine. On a normal running, normal conditions, it can start to glow, and it will basically it can ignite the fuel before the spark plug does or at the same time, and then you have two flame fronts, so two ignition points and two what they call flame fronts, two fires burning towards each other. When they hit each other in the combustion chamber, they call it detonation. This is what pinging and whatnot on older cars were, is that the car was pre-igniting the fuel or igniting the fuel at about the same time the spark plug was. And when they do that, they create a lot of NOx. Well, NOx, oxides of nitrogen, are a detrimental thing for the society and for our air. So the federal government wants to control them, and that's fine. I'm not judging or anything. But the way they control that easily in your car is with a sensor that tells the computer that this is happening, and then they retard the timing so that there's not as long a burn time inside the combustion chamber, which lowers the temperatures, which reduces NOx. Well, the flip side of that is you don't get to utilize that fuel as much, and you don't get the power out of the fuel that you could potentially get. So we do combustion cleaning so that we can lower the amount of NOx or carbon inside the combustion chamber, so we can increase ignition timing so that you get more power out of the fuel that you have. Ultimately, better fuel economy and better emissions, because it also, the flip side of that NOx equation is that when we're not burning the fuel as long, that means that it doesn't get burnt completely, and we have higher hydrocarbons, or CO, carbon monoxide, and HC, hydrocarbons, coming out of the combustion chamber, which have to be scrubbed and cleaned by the catalytic converter before it goes up tailpipe. So then the catalytic converter is working harder to overcome this, and it's a catch because, you know, we really do want to lower the NOx, but we don't want to increase the hydrocarbon and the tailpipe emissions. And so we're trying to fight that back and forth. And if it gets too bad, or you're driving the car under heavy loads a lot, especially in warmer conditions, then you can damage the catalyst, which means now we are out, you know, hundreds to thousands of dollars repairing a catalytic converter that was damaged because we were not running the engine properly. And catalytic converters on newer cars are very sensitive creatures. They don't like and can't handle damage. And damage being an inefficient running engine. It's kind of like some of these new windshields on the fuel economy cars. They're very lightweight windshields, and they do not like rocks and items being launched at them while driving down the freeway. And a little chip can really scatter and run really fast because the windshield is made with less glass, and so it's lighter, which makes the car more fuel efficient. And so catalytic converters are the same way in these cars. Catalytic converters, one of the things that the manufacturer has to put in, mandatory, but there's no positive for the customer. It reduces performance, not a lot, but a little bit. So they have to overcome that. It's extra weight, which is not huge, but still, and it's a huge expense. The catalytic converters are very expensive for the manufacturers, and no customer looks under the car and goes, oh, good, you got a big cat on there, so it'll scrub the exhaust really good and make it really clean. No customer has ever said that I know of. And when they go to buy a new car, oh, I don't want to buy this car, the catalytic converter is too small. No, nobody knows what they are, what they do. So these manufacturers are putting hundreds of dollars into these catalytic converters and not seeing a return from the customer. Well, if they can save money by making that cat smaller and smaller, by making the engine more efficient and doing a better job of burning the gas, then they get to save money. The flip side, though, is when we have an issue, we're not tuning up our cars properly, we're not using the proper grade of fuel, we are, or good quality fuel, or we are doing the maintenance that needs to be done in the way it's designed, now you have early failures of these devices, and it costs us a lot, and it costs the manufacturers a lot. So they're trying to do what they can. We need to help them do what they can, and that's how we do that, is by maintenance, making sure that we're doing our part, and it really does make a big difference. And when you can put a better quality fuel in, yeah, it costs you a couple more cents at the pump, but let's say you have a 10-gallon tank and it costs you 10 cents more, you're out another buck. That's not a lot of money. And for an extra dollar, you get a higher quality fuel. And I mean by high quality is, in the past, and I haven't done research on this for some time, but in the past, Chevron fuels were some of the best. Now, like I said, I haven't done research on them in quite a while. And then Shell had their V-Power, and the V-Power gas was five times the cleaning agent in the premium than the normal 87 had. Well, if I drop some of that in, every other tank, every third tank of fuel, it's not going to impact me really badly on 20 cents a gallon or whatever, probably. It's not going to hurt me a lot financially, but it as far as when I put it, when I pay the bill at the pump. But the flip side, though, is when I go to the shop or when I see my components failing, they should can fail less and last longer, and I get better fuel economy because of the better fuel. I get to pay I get to be paid back later on in lack of, you know, less maintenance cost and less repair cost. And those are big compared to fuel savings. I've been around a couple of economical cars that get good fuel economy, but the flip side, though, is their components don't last as long, and the customer has to replace that car earlier or spend thousands of dollars repairing it. And you run the numbers, and it's not much of a, it's not a very good trade. So buying a good quality car that lasts, that will work and service you well and do what you need it to do, ultimately is better than buying one based on the fuel economy numbers or the fuel economy, or buying one that has doesn't have a good maintenance record or does, yeah, basically that. If you're buying the car for fuel economy, make sure that you look at its reliability and longevity, because those two could shoot you in the foot compared to fuel economy. The offset isn't always there. I have seen a lot of the economical cars not last, and that's unfortunate, but that's how we get there. You know, if you buy those low rolling resistance tires that get you better fuel economy, a lot of them don't last as long as the standard tire in the same size, weight rating, everything else, same rating. So the payoff, it probably isn't there, but, you know, run your own numbers. See what others have found. I have, but make sure you do multiples. Look at the pros and the con people. The people that say, oh, no, you know, these tires are the best I've ever seen, and the people that say, these are the worst tires I've ever used. And look at their data and their real-life explanations and experiences, because it really can make a big difference. And ordering tires, man, order your tires. You know, when your tire person says, you need to replace tires, or whoever says you need to replace tires, don't just roll up to the tire place and go, okay, hey, you know, I need tires, let's put some tires on. Because you're going to get what they have in stock, not necessarily what you need or what's best for your car. And that's a reality that we all have to live with. That there's so many makes, models, and sizes now, and applications, that it's hard to stock a good variety as a tire seller. Even a big tire seller, it's hard to stock a good variety. So you may end up finding yourself with some less than good tires because they were in stock and they were on sale. And for me to save $100 on a set of tires that I don't like, that's a long marriage, you know, 50,000 mile marriage for something I don't like. I'd rather spend the extra $100 and buy something I like, something I want, something that'll perform like I want it to perform. And that could be, you know, off-road, that could be speed, that could be sound, whatever your performance needs are out of a tire. Buying a good quality tire that will do that can maybe get you 60, 70,000 miles instead of 50, and have a love affair with tires. And I know that sounds silly, but it's no different than shoes. You buy a cheap set of shoes because they were less expensive and they don't fit right, and you end up either not wearing them, they stay in the closet and rot in the closet, or you do wear them and you hurt your feet, that's a bad marriage. That's bad. It cuts down everything, and it lowers your drive to do things on your feet. Same thing with tires. If the tires suck and your car sucks because of it, you're going to want to drive your car less and use it less and enjoy it less. And why do you have it then? There are little time machines. I love my time machines. They get me from here to there faster than anything else, short distance. I try to make my little time machines as reliable, comfortable, and useful as I can. They need to serve the purpose I want them for, just as all of us should. We spend a lot of money on our cars. Between the purchase and maintenance and care, we spend a tremendous amount of money on our cars, and that money is hard-earned, in my opinion. Why wouldn't we want it to do all the things we want it to do and give us a good return as far as longevity and lifespan? And this is what my focus is on our repair shop, is I want your little baby to go forever, and I want it to be reliable and useful. So if you have questions, I mean, you're more than welcome to call us. Call your service provider. You know, find somebody that you like. And I've talked about this before. Find somebody you like and want to be around and want to spend your money, you know, spend your hard-earned money at a business that you want to spend your hard-earned money at, and see what their advice is and what direction they recommend. It's in your best interest. It really, really, really is. It's in all of our best interest to take care of our toys, whatever that toy may be, whether it's your guitar, your shoot, your water pick, whatever your toy is, your leaf blower, taking care of it really can make a big difference. And if you have a gas-powered small engine, I would use premium fuel in it, because when you use it that last time for the season and it gets put away and you don't realize it's the last time for the season, and it sits there all winter with the nasty, cheapy fuel in it, and then it won't start the next year, and you have to spend $150 at the local lawnmower repair shop, you're going to be frustrated. Where if you just, you know, used premium fuel, once again, we're out a couple bucks to offset that repair bill, and your repair guy is probably incredible and you love him, but it'd sure be nice to see him a little less often maybe. And if you could help with that by adding premium fuel to your mix, or buying the pre-mixed and or non-ethanol fuel from them. I mean, it's a little pricey in that steel can, but how much do you use a year? One can a year? You know, if that's all you use is a gallon a year, then it really can make a huge, huge difference in reliability and the love and use of your toy. It really does make sense, and it does pay in spades. So that's my spiel on that piece. Hopefully it helps. Am I ready to go on the next? Let's go on the next rant. Do we need any callers? Just one text. I like that. Owner's manuals are the minimum required. That's the minimum required by the manufacturer. So if you think about that, and you've got a car that has a recommended oil, like the Corvette. I remember years ago the Corvette recommended Mobil 1. And you didn't have to. It's your car. Do whatever you want. But if you had an engine failure in a Corvette, the very first thing they would do, once they verified it did have a failed engine, would be to take a sample of that oil. And if it does not have Mobil 1 in it, they would not warranty the engine, because they felt that it was that important. And if you didn't, that's fine, but you're paying the engine, they're not going to. So that was a minimum requirement for them. So if you think about that owner's manual, not as the most you can do, as the minimum you can do, then it changes everything. That is the minimum they require in that owner's manual of what they expect. And if you are a person that doesn't drive a lot, you also have to look at the days, not just the miles. Miles are a good gross understanding relationship between wear and vehicle and the vehicle, but that's one aspect. Years ago, Ford put an hour meter in their engines because too many people were letting them sit there and idle, because of their jobs. And people were finding that their car was out of warranty because it was too many idle hours. There weren't very many miles put on it. It was just too many idle hours. And they would fall out of warranty because of idle hours. And that's still that engine running. Well, these are all things we need to consider when we're talking about cars. How you treat your car. And I'm not saying you should be treating it differently. I'm saying we need to maintain your car based on your usage, your particular needs. Why should you get into a car and drive it 20 miles a day just so it fits in the average of everybody else? I don't think you should. At the same time, I don't think you should have four cars because you travel 100 miles a day. I'm saying we need to change our maintenance based on usage and time, not just odometer. Odometer is a gross thing, it's not what we should be looking at everything. That's just one aspect of time, one factor of usage and time. The time is another one, and how we use it. My truck gets the oil changed more often because its usage is usually heavy load and short trip. That's not a good combination for my truck, in my opinion. So the oil gets changed more often. The fuel filter gets changed more often. The air filter gets changed more often because of the way I use my vehicle. And I'm not saying I'm not saying it needs to be changed every 3,000 miles. Once again, if you don't know, do research. Talk to professionals. Talk to people that actually spend their life maintaining cars and repairing them, and have been educated in that way. And those are the people I recommend talking to and have a relationship for the longevity and better use of your car and your automobile. The people that do that I'm around, that I talk to, are much happier than those that say, "I know you're not, you don't know." And my response is, "You're right. I do this all day, every day." You looked up something on the internet one time. There's a huge difference. I guess we're rolling towards the end, huh, Jim?
We are. We're just about a minute away. Just about a minute. Yeah, 1 minute right now, actually.
Well, then I guess we should start working towards the end. I like it. All right. Well, I want everybody to have a lot of fun this weekend. Enjoy our Central Coast. Enjoy your Central Coast. We're going to enjoy the desert and have some fun out here. Enjoy life, enjoy your car, maintain it, and it will treat you well. I guess that's the whole aspect of the whole show, isn't it? Maintain your car, and it'll treat you well.
That's right, exactly. Hey, by the way, if you need to get some parts to maintain your car, Westside Auto, right? 20% off, I think, on Saturdays.
20% off, yep. 20% off. Go talk to Steve,
yep.
And he will set you up. And they really do set you up.
All right,
that's
Jason.
That's why I've become so good at my job. People like this. Thank you very much. Enjoy your weekend.
The 920 KVEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kvec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 0111-911.